My name is Barbara, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Welcome to the OA Literature Workshop. Please help me open the meeting with serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Today we will be looking at two pamphlets. The first one is called Welcome Back, and the second one is called Members in Relapse. OA has lots of literature written by compulsive overeaters for compulsive overeaters. On the subject of relapse, one of the 9 books that we have, in addition to the big book, is a collection of lifeline stories called New Beginnings. We also have 5 manuals or handbooks, including the 12 Step Within Handbook, and that is a great reference for service bodies and meetings who wish to address the subject of relapse. We also have a Welcome Back packet of literature, which includes the 2 pamphlets I just mentioned and some other materials. And also, I'm just really excited to remind everyone that we have 20 pamphlets and 3 OA books translated into Spanish. Right now I'm going to start the workshop by telling my story. I first started compulsively overeating when I was probably, the first time anybody ever made fun of me for being fat was when I was in third grade. So I was about 8 years old at that time. But I wasn't really fat then. I probably didn't start getting chunky until I was about 12. High school was horrendous for all of the usual reasons. By the time I graduated, I weighed 170 pounds. And I recall that I used homework as an excuse to eat while nobody was looking. After I graduated high school, I went on a starvation diet. So by the time I went to my freshman year in college in September, I was actually a normal size. I went on my own little diet for that first semester, and then I went home for Christmas, and then everything fell apart. And I remember sitting there with my father binging with him. So we had this little togetherness thing going over food. After that, for the rest of the time I was in college, I struggled to keep my weight from getting way out of control. And I did okay until my last year. And I had gotten married. I met my husband in college, and he accepted me at the weight that I was. After we were married, we were separated. We were living in different locations for that final semester. And I was very, very depressed about this. So I turned to my usual food thing and binged like crazy, but I also picked up drinking. Towards the end of the school year, my professor came to me and he said, "You're going to fail one of your required classes," which would have meant that I wouldn't graduate. And what happened was, for the first time, realized the power of denial. Gee, if I don't study, I'm not going to pass the class. And it was amazing to me that I could be that oblivious to that reality. But denial is indeed very powerful. After I graduated college, I started the diet club thing. And as I said, I'm fond of saying, I struck out. I went to three different times the diet clubs, and I ended up fatter than I was when I started. At the end of the last diet club, I was really, really depressed. That was 1975. I just was out of control. I just ate everything I could get my hands on. I gave up. There's no point. It was a waste of time. I'm just not doing this anymore. So I reached, during that period of time, I reached my top weight of 186 pounds. In the winter of 76, so this would be early 76, I got the flu. And I was so sick, the only thing I could take in was orange juice for a week. And that introduced me to a new concept, that it actually was possible for me not to be hungry 24/7. So that gave me more hope. So I started my own little diet. Now, that didn't last terribly long time, probably a few weeks. And and I knew it was just a matter of time. I needed outside support. Now, I knew about OA. I had read about it in the paper. They published it's a little wallet card called Just for Today, and I was really taken with that, and I wrote away to World Service. This was in 74. I got literature back, and I didn't come to an OA meeting, A, because there wasn't one in my area, but also because they mentioned the word God, and I decided it had to be a religious thing, so that was when I continued on with the Diet Club thing. So at this point, I became willing to go to an OA meeting had started. I went to an OA meeting close to my home. That was the first meeting, and that was April 4th, 1976. And I got a sponsor, and I made phone calls. They said, call each other, and I did that. And I did get abstinent probably within a few weeks. It's a little bit of a struggle, but I managed. And after about, a few months, probably during the summer sometime, I did get abstinence finally. It was a very strict abstinence. Actually, I did lose too much weight on that abstinence, and a doctor instructed me to put some weight back on. But probably, I can't remember exactly when, sometime during that first year, I was doing okay, but I had a slip on New Year's. That's what it was. I had a slip on New Year's, and that really scared me. Now, my sponsor had been telling me all along, work the steps, a food plan without the steps is just another diet. And on January, New Year's, I had a slip, and that scared me, and I became willing to work the fourth step. At that time, and my fourth step, my famous fourth step inventory, consisted of a quarter of a page. And I will be the first to tell you that was totally inadequate. Fortunately, my sponsor's only response to this very, very short inventory was, I did that too. However inadequate that inventory may have been, it was sufficient to get me abstinence for almost the rest of that year, which was 1977. And there was one item on that inventory I can remember kind of who it was involved. It was something that when I was a little kid, but I cannot. It was completely gone, removed from my memory. I have no idea what was on that inventory. So I'm very grateful that however inadequate and imperfect that inventory was, it was, quote, good enough. I did okay throughout the summer, and in the fall of that year, my husband got transferred to basic training in San Antonio for the U.S. Army. I got there, we moved, and we went through all that and drove across the country to get there. And I did fine. Got there, started going to meetings. Then I was waking up in the middle of the night crying. Now, I was at my goal weight at this point, so, you know, everything was just wonderful as far as weight goes, but there was this terrible emotional thing. And I decided, and talking to people, that I really, really needed to do another more thorough fourth and fifth step inventory, and I did do that. In December, I moved back to the East Coast to my husband's first posting, and I did okay until December 26th, when I decided that turkey was safe to binge on because it didn't have any sugar. And I would get back on it tomorrow. Well, tomorrow did not show up for 15 months. And it was just this slow acceleration, and it exploded into a weight gain of 20 pounds in 2 weeks, which was just awful. And I never stopped going to meetings. I was very, very depressed. I kept coming back, no matter what. I couldn't find a sponsor. I had an OA friend who was a neighbor, and we kind of called each other. Neither of us could find a sponsor. And we did get abstinent within a week of each other. That was in the spring of 1979. After that, we got abstinent. I started losing the weight yet again and doing service. And I was always really big on service. Maybe doing literature or whatever. Literature was a good job for me because I was always interested in the new literature that was coming out. And if I was literature chair, I would have first dibs on new literature. And I would, and it was also, it would also keep me coming back to meetings. This abstinence, I worked probably, I did the fifth step again, and I went up to step 6 and 7, and I made 1 9th step amends. Didn't really do the 8th step very well, but I had 1 amends that was really obvious to do. And this abstinence lasted almost 2 years. But again, I did not finish the 12th step, so guess what? My abstinence did not last. In the, let's see, I'm going to say in early 1981, I moved to Germany to accompany my husband. And I went to a meeting 12 hours after I got off the plane, only it wasn't there because no one had bothered to remove the meeting listing. I started this meeting up again. It turned out there were 3 meetings in the area, and I started going to those meetings. The first summer I was there, I was the only member keeping those 3 meetings open because everybody went on vacation. We stayed behind. We went to my brother's wedding, and that was we were still in the country. And it wasn't, and that was a very wonderful service for me personally to do because those meetings were available for me and for my future sponsor. And this is the woman that I was working with when I got my current abstinence of 31 years. She just showed up one day. She said, when I called her up, she said, "You have not worked the 12 steps. That's why you're having so much trouble keeping your abstinence." I went and binged over that. I didn't want to work the steps. I certainly didn't want to make amends to people I hated. But after I was finished with that binge, I read the step one in the AA 12 and 12. And at the end it said, "We stand ready to do anything which will relieve us of the merciless obsession." Now, I didn't really have much hope that working the steps would make any significant difference with my ability to abstain, but I did think that possibly if I had some peace of mind, that even if my weight was still continued to be erratic, abstinent sometimes, not abstinent other times, that peace of mind was a sufficient motivation for me to become willing to work the steps. And so I became willing at that point. This was probably in late 1982, probably early 1983, hard to say. I'm not sure exactly. But what did happen was when I completed all of the steps and then started doing 10, 11, and 12, 10 is daily inventory, 11 is meditation, and 12 is carry the message and practice these principles in all our affairs. And I would say probably a few weeks, few months, whatever, not sure, wasn't terribly long, I got up one morning, made my breakfast, and I couldn't finish it. And I was like, uh-oh, I mean, what am I going to do if I'm hungry between meals? Called my sponsor and I asked her what was the matter, and she said, "This is what's supposed to happen. If you're full, trust that you've had enough food until the next meal." And that was an interesting concept. And so I was fine. And it was during these first few months of this my current abstinence that some very amazing things started to happen, and probably one of the most dramatic, where I could really see my attitude was very different, was my boss during this period of time. She spent a month making treats for her big Christmas party bash. So there was like wall-to-wall food. It turned out the party was the same evening as one of our regular meetings, so I made the decision that I would go to the party and then at 7:30 to go to the OA meeting. Well, it got to be 7:30 and time to leave for the OA meeting, and I realized I was having such a good time at the party, I forgot to eat anything. Surrounded by food and forgetting to eat anything? I mean, that just totally blows my mind. And I was like, wow, something is really different. So this particular attitude is the result of the 12 steps, nothing else. A diet did not give me this attitude. All the diet gave me was obsessing about what I was eating and when and how much and all of this kind of thing. But the steps do not do that. And that brings me up to this abstinence. And I'm going to stop at that point. I'm going to skip over many years just to share briefly that this program works. In 2009, I had a severely stressful few weeks. I moved my mother from her home to an elder care facility close to me. I had to hospitalize her the first week she was at that facility. I had to quit my job because I was taking care of her and also because I had a medical problem. And in addition, the stress of dealing with all of my mother's elder care issues caused me to develop an illness that lasted 9 weeks and from which I did not recover for probably 4 or 5 months. I wasn't fully recovered for about another 4 or 5 months. Now, this all happened within 2 months. At no time, not only did I eat compulsively during that very stressful time, I had no desire to eat compulsively during that time. And if the desire to eat compulsively had ever come, I would have given in. There would be no way that I could have resisted the desire to eat compulsively. So just to give you a brief overview of my story, we will continue on with the rest of the workshop. Okay, so the first pamphlet I'm going to talk about is Welcome Back, and I told you how that started. And if you have this pamphlet, you could follow along. I'm just going to pick up some points from the pamphlet. And the first section talks about desperation. At the end of the section, it says it takes what it takes. And that really describes my feeling. I was terribly ashamed of having relapsed. There were people at Means who were abstinent, and I thought I was less than instead of being just another suffering compulsive overeater. I had trouble finding a sponsor. Nobody would sponsor me. I had a sponsor who fired me. So there were a lot of things that happened both inside and a couple of things from the outside that elicited shame. But I kept coming back, and I finally became willing to do what it took to get abstinent. Relapse really taught me about my disease. My disease operates a little bit differently than some other people. I mean, with other people, it's particular foods. And what I found out is that it's any food can be a binge food for me under certain circumstances. So there are no real safe foods for me. My relapses taught me that healthy foods can be just as problematic as other. And I remember my first relapse in OA started with Christmas turkey. And I was saying to myself, oh, this is no sugar in this turkey. This is perfectly safe. I will be just fine. And I'll get back on it tomorrow. Well, tomorrow didn't come until 15 months later. I've certainly had times, those of you who heard my story, where I just gave up trying and I just would binge out of control. But after I came into OA, even when I was out of control, I still kept showing up at meetings. I could have that 1 hour of abstinence a week. For me, the relapse, the emotional underpinning of the relapse, basically came from the reality that without having done any step work and not making real changes, that living without food was unbearable. And at certain times, certain things would happen. For example, the year that 1978, there were some terrible family issues that came up that just made the binging I was doing just that much worse. And I wanted oblivion, and I would do anything that I could to just, zone out. So it was a little bit different. I don't know that I was really denying I had a disease particularly. I think it was just, yeah, I have the disease. I'm out of control, but I don't know what to do about this. I can't stand living like this. The next section talks about powerlessness versus responsibility. And it says, the first part, it says, I'm powerless. I can't help myself. That's true. Willpower alone cannot do the job. The good news is that while we are powerless, we're not helpless. We do have a power to take certain actions that result in the arrest, not cure, of the disease. Cure would be I don't have to go to OA meetings the rest of my life and I'll be able to eat healthy. I mean, that's cure. I don't have that. I have to go to meetings. I have to do certain things. I have to work the steps. I can exert willpower over making a phone call when I'm hungry, the tools, or some other tool. I can exert willpower over working the steps, but I cannot work willpower on getting a half gallon of ice cream and sitting there and being able to stop in the middle of that, or, you know, after one portion. That's willpower cannot help in that. But willpower can help in me doing my reading and my writing, whatever it is that I need to do to keep my head as sane as possible so that I have fewer temptations to overeat. I certainly went to any lengths to get food in the middle of the night, but after I got abstinent, I was driving 2 hours each way to get to a meeting every week because there was only one meeting. That was the closest meeting where there was an abstinent sponsor. That was it. And I did that, and sometimes I would spend the night and sometimes not. But that's going to any length. And going to any length is a lot of things. It's also being willing to work the ninth step. One of the amends that I made, the woman totally rejected me. But most people were very... either ignored me or they were, you know, okay about it. But there was one person who did not and has never accepted my amends, and there's nothing I can do about that. I did my part. So I can learn from other members, and I can be reminded of actions that I need to take to recover from this disease and maintain the recovery that I got. And at the end of the section, powerlessness, it talks about dieting in OA, which I certainly did plenty of for 6.5 years. The next section talks about perfectionism, and this was, and it said, we want to have everything at the end of the first paragraph aligned in neat, orderly, good and bad stacks, and when life isn't like that, we feel frustrated. I have learned through a lot of years of work in recovery to learn to live with gray areas. And one of those gray areas is when I'm dealing with really powerful emotions, it's messy. For example, grief after my father died. My father died 19 years ago. It was very, very messy time for me emotionally. The way I got through it was by writing every morning. And that was writing for maybe an hour, possibly two, every morning gave me 24 hours of not raging at my husband. And my animals. That's what it did. And so every morning I had to get up and had to write uncensored just to keep those feelings under control or so that I wouldn't lose my temper. The next paragraph at the end, it says, I've already messed this up, so I might as well continue eating. I'll start again tomorrow. For me, day one can start 20 times a day or 100 times a day. And when I was recovering from my many relapses, so let's say I have a binge at 11:30 in the morning, then I would start my abstinence. I would eat my lunch at noon as if I never had the binge. I might not be able to eat at all, and then just go on the best I can the rest of my day as if I was abstinent the rest of the day. That's what I had to do. And I had to do this over and over. You know, it's not like this worked the first time. When I have cravings, and it says in the next paragraph, when we have cravings, we said we take immediate action, we address the problem, not the food. And what I always ask my sponsees is, what is underneath this craving of food? For example, I remember one time I was having some trouble with food. It's a long, long time ago. I was in nursing school, 1990 this was. And I just didn't know what was going on. So I did a little inventory, and I determined that I had a health insurance form I was supposed to fill out for reimbursement for a couple $100. I just hate doing that stuff. Once I figured it out and took the action, which is to fill out the form and send it in, within a day, I figured out what change I needed to make in my food, and that was it. Because I didn't know. I honestly didn't know what the problem was, because it wasn't like I was, you know, eating chocolate cake every afternoon. So that's how it works for me. And I use the tools to get me to that point, to figure out what I'm wanting to eat over, and then taking the appropriate action. And that's the important part. Identify the reason and take the appropriate action. These two things both have to be there. Otherwise, it won't work. We make mistakes. This is the last page. We make mistakes in other areas besides food choices, but we don't have to eat because of those mistakes. We have challenges we don't know how to handle, at least not yet, but we don't eat because of the challenges. In 2009, my mother moved to a facility 8 miles from my house. She used to be a day's drive away. I hospitalized her within a week. It was a near death. I lost my job because of a medical problem. I developed another medical problem where I was sick for 9 weeks. And this all happened within, 2 months period of time. And not only did I not eat over it, I didn't want to eat over it. And it was one thing after another, and I just, one day at a time, I won't eat just for today. I talked to my sponsor, I read, I wrote, I did all these things just to keep myself from going off the deep end, and I was able to keep my abstinence. If cravings had come to me at any time during that period, there's no way I would have been able to resist. They never came, not even once. It's amazing to me. It talks about the last section and says, some of us liken our time away from the program or away from abstinence to an electrical short circuit. When the circuit breaks, all power is lost. Once the connection is fixed, it is as though the break never happened. And that really has been my experience in a lot of ways. It was like once I got my abstinence back, things that I had forgotten while I was binging just started coming back to me. It really is interesting how that can happen. At the end, it says, keep coming back no matter what. And that's what I did. That is the end of this particular pamphlet. And the other pamphlet is a booklet called Members in Relapse. The first section, at the end, it says, being loved and accepted, even when we were compulsively overeating, even when we were falling apart emotionally, even when we felt hopeless and unlovable, was the key to loving and accepting ourselves, and from there, getting abstinent. One of the things that has been a saving grace for me in my many years of struggle before I got abstinent was having at least one program friend to turn to. When I was in my first relapse, I didn't have a sponsor, and it was a neighbor who went to meetings with me. She was like an OA buddy. Neither one of us were abstinent, so we couldn't really be sponsors, but we were accountable to each other, and we got abstinent within a week of each other. And the next section talks about listen to the voices of members who have been there. And one of the things I wanted to pick up on towards the bottom of the page was talking about isolation. This reminds me of some members put together these buttons that we walked around in the early 90s when we were working on some more on the, for example, the 12-step within handbook. We had buttons, and these buttons were, let us love you until you can love yourself. That idea of unconditional acceptance was something that I never got when I was a kid. I didn't have any experience of it. So to come into OA and be able to tell my sponsor that everything that I was the most ashamed of, I mean, my sponsor knows everything. And if she doesn't know it, it's because I forgot to tell her. I've known her since the late 70s. To be able to give my inventory and to be able to hold up my head high, I'm no worse and I'm no better than any other human being on the face of the earth, because I used to feel I was lower than dirt. I remember that talks about sticking with me for the long haul at the end of this section. Love people and don't throw them away. I had the very first sponsee I had in program never recovered. Her problems were overwhelming. She had a special needs daughter. She was on welfare. I mean, just a whole bunch of them. And I certainly understood. But I never gave up on her. And about every year when I came back to visit, when I came back home to visit that area, I would call her up. And I did this for probably 20 years, till she finally developed her final illness. And she was amazed that I didn't give up on her, as everybody else had. And I always remember her, because that person could be me. I was certainly somebody who did not start out being a Miss OA from the very beginning. It took a long time for me to get my act together with the food. In Region 7, where I am, one of our intergroups, every 12th of the month, the 12-step within committee chair of the region sends out this email reminder, call someone you haven't heard from in a while. So somebody hasn't heard about that, wanted to make sure people knew about it. The next page, page 3, abstinence is not simply sticking to a food plan, and having trouble doesn't always mean with food. Some still suffering OA members are not out there eating. And I've certainly spent a lot of time as being very miserably unhappy in meetings. It had nothing to do with food and everything to do with my personal problems that I was having to deal with. Sin is not well necessarily. When I'm abstinent, everything in my life just shows up, and I feel everything. The next part, it says, at meetings, it's important to discuss topics that deal with recovery rather than food and weight. People having trouble with abstinence or weight don't feel judged. For me, I think the best thing is a balance to deal with food and weight and also deal with depth recovery. I think that's very important so that the long-timers get reminded of where they were and the newcomers hear something they can identify with. I think that's very, very important. You can help by simply showing up at meetings and staying abstinent yourself. I personally need meetings so I don't forget. I cannot afford to take the meetings in my area for granted. We have, I think, 4 or 5 meetings in my area, and there's 2 that are pretty strong. One's very strong, 2, another one, it varies. But there have been times when we were really, really hurting when it came to meetings. I cannot afford to take them for granted. And I can't tell you how many times people have said, thank you for coming so that we can see that long-term recovery is possible. Because I don't think there's anybody there's somebody who came into program a couple of years after I did and has been absent a long time, but there's just a couple of us. To get other long-timers, we have to go about an hour away in the urban areas. Coffee fellowship. I love being reminded of that. I'm not able to do that because of a particular circumstance right now, but it really has helped me a great deal. Service on the next page, page 4, service has made me feel needed, and it also has allowed me to be accountable. If I had to keep, when I was in relapse, I had to show up at the meeting. So at doing something like that, because when I was in relapse, I didn't want to show up. I wanted to isolate and hide out because I was ashamed and blah, blah, blah. Because when I was gaining 20 pounds in 2 weeks, my neighbor that I told you about in my story, she could see the weight coming on. It was coming on that fast. I mean, if somebody you see most days a week is visibly getting bigger, that's really a very fast weight gain. So service has kept me on track many, many, many times. And I say that even now that I'm working on the world service level, it's just as true now as it was in the 70s and early 80s. Anonymity is a really important point. The next section, and I'm not going to go into a lot about that, just because we are all compulsive overeaters does not mean we have the same needs. There are some people who respond to tough love and people who shy away from it. When I first came into program, tough love was not going to work for me. But after I'd been in OA for a while, tough love was what I needed. So I think really what it's about is, yes, you may change whether you need tough love or gentleness at a particular time. It will change over time. Another section, 5, avoid being program pushy, trying to impose your way of recovering on other people. I've had people try to, push me into something that didn't work for me. That it hasn't been a problem, me resisting it, but I could see other people who had a very hard time dealing with that. I've talked with people like that. My job as a sponsor is not to tell the sponsee what to do, but it is to help the sponsee find their own food, their own feelings, and their own situational triggers that get them into trouble. I don't know what those are for another person. I only know my own. I can share my own, and they can identify or not identify. This is a very, very important point. I think I am out of time for this section. What I'm going to do is stop the recording.